Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. All right, today's show, well, let me put it this way. We are going to open up talking with Deborah Sweet. Deborah's the national director of the World Can't Wait organization, and she's been in Germantown, Maryland, as part of the Summer of Trust, defending the clinic of the abortion provider, Dr. Leroy Carhart. Listeners to this show are familiar with Dr. Carhart. We've had him on the show a number of times. Also familiar with Deborah. At the back end of the show, we'll be talking with Father Roy Bourgeois about the Maryknoll Mission's attempt to excommunicate him, to kick him out of their order after he's been in it for 39 years. Why? Well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. It's a very serious thing, and we'll be talking with Roy Bourgeois about that. First is Deborah Sweet. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, why don't we tell people, first off, I mentioned that you were in Germantown, Maryland. You were part of the Summer of Choice, and you were working to defend Dr. Carhart's clinic in the face of a massive assault by a mob of Christian fascists organized by Operation Rescue. Why don't you tell us about that? What actually happened at the clinic?
Well, you know, really interesting situation. I think people are familiar with Operation Rescue for the last 25 years or so, massing in front of clinics and trying to prevent patients from going in. That was one part of their history. The continued disturbing history was that this particular group, Operation Rescue, moved to Wichita, Kansas, about 10 years ago, and their mission was to take out Dr. Tiller from the practice of abortion. And in fact, they created the climate and associated directly with Scott Roeder, who was convicted of shooting Dr. Tiller in the head a little more than 2 years ago. And George Tiller, of course, I think people know, was the premier provider of later-term abortions, including into the third trimester. And he would have people coming from literally around the globe and all over this country, women that and their families who were seeking to end pregnancies, mainly for the reasons of fetal anomaly or really serious health consequences for the mother, and in some cases women who found out very late that they were pregnant and wanted to terminate their pregnancies for whatever reason they needed to. And Dr. Tiller was killed. At that time, Dr. Leroy Carhart was working closely with him. They were very close colleagues, and Dr. Carhart would come from his clinic in Nebraska to Wichita to be part of this abortion care. So when the world lost Dr. Tiller, it was Dr. Carhart that stepped up, not only to say, we are going to continue this providing of later-term abortions, but I'm going to step forward and teach more doctors how to do this. So when the laws over the last year were severely restricted his ability to practice in Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, and those Midwestern states where he had access to doing abortions, he moved part of his practice to Germantown, Maryland, which is a suburb of D.C. and Baltimore, last October, and he's opened as really one of the few places on the Eastern Seaboard where women could get abortions later in pregnancy after 20 weeks. Again, he's not doing a huge amount of them, but this was a tremendous help for women who urgently needed this kind of abortion. And immediately, Operation Rescue from Wichita, Kansas starts, announced that Dr. Carhart was their number one target. And to be targeted by an organization that has this murderous history of killing abortion providers they identify and target is extremely concerning. But in this case, they're messing with a doctor who I think is quite extraordinary. We were on the phone with Dr. Carhart starting in May when we first heard that Operation Rescue was going to come to his clinic in late July, early August, and was calling on people from around the country to be there to shut down the clinic. And he he called me from World Can't Wait, and he said, look, I want you guys to do what you did a couple of years ago at my clinic in Nebraska, and that is bring all the people that are supportive of women's abortion rights that you can, and let's have a big public presence. I want the media and I want the politicians, especially in Washington, to know that there are all the people that there are supporting abortion rights. So essentially that's what we did. We started a group, a loose coalition called Summer of Trust. See, the anti-abortion people called their week Summer of Mercy. And this was a continuation of what they did to Dr. Tiller in 1991 and 2001. They called it Summer of Mercy 2.0. And this is because, you know, they have this fetish, Michael, with the fetus. So the mercy was for the fetuses, the, as they call the preborn. And we decided to use the term Summer of Trust because Dr. Tiller and Dr. Carhart, their mantra has been trust women. So our Summer of Trust was to trust women, that women need to be, have access and be in a position where they can make their own decisions. Not that freedom of choice, as Colbert had a hilarious thing about this. He said, you know, freedom of choice, well, that's something between a woman's husband and her doctor. No. Freedom of choice in this sense is that a woman absolutely has to have the ability to control her own body and to choose during any particular pregnancy whether she wants to continue that or not. Everything growing inside of her is subordinate to her own life. So we went out there with this message, and it was really quite heartening that hundreds of people came to stand in the front of the clinic on the first day of the Summer of Choice, which is what Dr. Carhart called this whole grouping. We had a walk and we raised $12,000 specifically to pay for abortions for low-income women. And we generated a lot of intense future relationships. We met people from really, I think, 18 states came. And we stayed out there, some of us, for more than 9 days in front of the clinic. And on a big, broad boulevard, we had huge signs that said, abortion on demand and without apology, abortion providers save women's lives, trust women, and we love Dr. Carhart. And as the week went on, I have to say that more and more people in the community started stopping, you know, bringing us coffee, donuts, money. I had someone from the board of the Maryland ACLU who happened to live across the street come over and say, you know, my wife and I, we just really want to thank you. We are so sick of seeing these anti-abortion activists on the street all the time, and to see you is wonderful. So that's what we were trying to do, is create a sense that, look, here are the people who really represent the interests of people all across this country standing proudly in support of Dr. Carhart, and we are not going to allow his clinic to be closed down, and we are not going to allow you to target and stop him. And to his credit, the clinic opened during the week we were there, and he was got safely into the clinic, and the patients that he had scheduled for the week also got safely into the clinic.
Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Deborah Sweet, who's the National Director of the World Can't Wait, and she's been part of the Summer of Trust, a movement, an action in that came together to defend the clinic of Dr. Leroy Carhart, one of the outstanding abortion providers in the country today, and a very heroic man we've had on the show a number of times, and he's a very heroic and very, you know, very, it's very important that he be defended, both especially in his own right and for himself, but also in terms of the bigger questions of what's surrounding, what's the context of everything that he does. Deborah, I wanted to get into that a little bit. You know, we kind of go over the point of these, the anti-abortion forces, and we kind of, you know, we say, okay, it's Operation Rescue. We said it targeted, you pointed out Scott Roeder and all this and what, you know, where he came from and what happened. But, you know, it really struck me, particularly looking at, you have Rick Perry, who's now running for president. You know, as of Saturday, he's going to run for president. And he just had recently had this huge, you know, sort of fascist rally in Texas, mm-hmm. where God was anointing him as the president, you know, as the, for his presidential campaign or whatever, at least unspoken, but actually certainly implied in a big way. And it really was a gathering of, you know, knuckle dragging fascist lunatics. And you think about this.
Well, you know, God does prefer to appoint and anoint his president from Texas.
Right, exactly.
I think that's well established.
That's what really worried me, okay? It's kind of, whoa! You know, big hats and those shoestring ties, it was driving me crazy. But the point is that there's a tendency, I think, for a lot of people to just be dismissive of this. But these kinds mm-hmm. of these Christian fundamentals, Christian fascist organizations and their program, which is very much anti-abortion is very much a major plank in their programs. Can you talk a little bit about who these people are, who Operation Rescue is? What does it mean? I mean, I know you hinted at this before, but it's a very, very important thing that they actually say Dr. Carhart is their number one target. Mm-hmm. You know, this raises some very big things. And then we can move into a little bit, I think, after the after that, talk about put this all in the bigger context as well. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the anti-abortion movement in this country, which is not only solidly against abortion, but in all cases against birth control, is solidly for the submission of women. Their whole ideological stand, and it is mixed up with, look, both the Christian fundamentalist outlook, but also at this clinic in Maryland, 95% of the people of the hundreds that came out on the anti-abortion side were actually brought by the Catholic Church, including the Diocese of D.C. and the Diocese of Baltimore. At least they signed on in support. I think Father Roy Bourgeois might be talking about this a little bit too, but these are institutions that are deeply misogynist, based primarily on the submission of women. And that's why abortion, you know, has become a touchstone question for them, and it ought to be one for us, for people who care about humanity and living in a world you want to live in. Everyone has to be deeply invested in a society where women can have some self-determination and be a part of changing the world and creating a society where humanity can be emancipated. But why does it come down to minding your own uterus? It is because at that juncture, each pregnancy and any kind of sexual activity, all the class relations in this society that depend on women being submissive are brought to bear. And in this society right now, it is increasingly difficult for women, as liberated as we are supposed to be, to actually find and get an abortion, to get any kind of good birth control, and to get even gynecological care. One of the things I love about Dr. Carhart, the Washington Post had an amazingly good interview with him for a liberal paper that's been completely fascinated with the antis. They sent a reporter to interview Dr. Carhart, and he said a couple of things that are just wonderful. He said, look, I want to expand services at the Germantown Clinic, just like I do in Nebraska. I want to provide the full range of reproductive health services, and I want to start treating lesbian, gay, and transgendered people. Because he said, you know, a lot of transgendered people can't get any good medical care because doctors do not want to examine them. But I do. You know, here he is making the point. Gender is a touch point issue as well. I want to treat gay, lesbian, and transgendered people. And I want to give women the ability to make their own decisions. So this is a huge question in this society. A lot of times on the side of people who support abortion rights, it gets buried as unimportant. But on the other side, as you're pointing out, this is huge for them. In fact, one of the things I learned from being out for days in front of this clinic talking to a lot of the young women that came and even some of the older ones, they were saying, I don't get it. These people are idiots, but I don't get why they're out here against abortion. And to really understand that, you know, I've been writing and I will be blogging about this more. You have to look at the status of women in the society, and you got to fearlessly look at religion, especially Christianity in this particular case, which rests on the oppression of women.
We're talking with Deborah Sweet, the National Director of the World Can't Wait organization, about the Summer of Trust, a mobilization to defend Dr. Leroy Carhart and his new abortion clinic in Germantown, Maryland. Well, let's talk about that last point, Deborah.
It is oftentimes the case that people will argue, look, you know, it's just, it's religion. Why are you going after these religious maniacs? And what does their religion actually have to do with the fascistic assault on women that they're behind? You know, I think that's a huge question. And oftentimes, I think even in the movement, there's often a struggle about whether you should even, you know, talk about religion and what it has to do with abortion.
Well, I have a funny story. Somebody that was kind of new to the whole political movement came with us, and there were different socialist groupings there, and she asked somebody from the Socialist Workers Party, oh, are you such and such a party? And they said, no, we are not. Those people criticize religion, and we would never do that. So a case in point, yes, much of the left doesn't want to take on the petty prejudices and the deep epistemological, ideological basis of religion, which is that some other force than human intelligence and human action is deciding everything for you. You know, what's the argument of the anti-abortion side? You, a mere woman, cannot mess with what God put inside you, a growing life. How dare you? You know, the only thing you can do is accept it as a blessing and, you know, let what God made happen inside you through, you know, a man, whoever that was, even including rapists. God decided for that embryo to start growing inside of you. It's a life. You can't touch it. This is nothing but the deeply misogynist control of women. In my opinion, all religions are based on that because they're a part of class society.
Mm-hmm. And all of that is also very much related to that damn snake, that horrendous apple, and that woman that just could not control her appetite, right? And she passed on this whole thing that now all women have to pay for. There you go.
I know, and she didn't understand that her husband, her government, and, you know, most of all, her God were supposed to be in control of her life. Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
That's right. And it goes all the way down to eating an apple, all right? So you're stay away from apples. I'm telling you, everybody. Anyway, but
the original sin all came from a woman.
That's right. Exactly. And see, and we can joke about it to a certain extent, but that actually is a lot of the ideological and the whole basis for this, you know, how they justify this assault on women. And even the idea that women have to bear children in order to make up for that sin, in order to atone for that original sin. You know, to me, when you look at that and you look at the basis for this and how they mobilize people around this, and look, I have relatives. I have plenty of relatives that who can be nice as can be when you're there. You know, you're over the holidays, you're visiting your relatives. They're all people who, you know, work every day of their lives. They don't have big fancy jobs. They're just regular, ordinary people that go to work and come home, you know, and yet at every year they get massively tied up and wrapped up in the Catholic mobilizations against abortion.
Yeah.
And it's really horrendous.
Right to Life March.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really horrendous. And to listen to them talk, they suddenly become people that you don't even know. You know, and I understand I've been reading a couple of things of the blogs around the Summer of Trust. And some of the things that came out there, seemed like it was very interesting that some of the younger people who had never been involved in this kind of movement before in defending the clinics against these anti-abortion fanatics, you know, went out into where the other rallies and whatnot and started talking to people. And it was really, as I understand, an eye-opener for a lot of these people, right?
Yeah, exactly. I loved being out there, first of all, because we were getting into all these questions. And, you know me, I do not accept the idea that we can't peel away some of these younger people from the other side. You know, they've been brainwashed in a sense, they don't have answers to life's deepest questions at all. They just have things that they've been told about what it is that, for instance, Dr. Carhart's supporters think. And we were able to set some of them clear on what it is we actually think. First of all, a fetus is not a baby. Here's the picture of it. So we did some of that kind of work. But I felt even especially among our own side. I have to say that some of the women's organizations that were there, whose main interest seemed to be working with law enforcement to keep us, that is, the rest of the pro-choice people in line and not engage with the antis, I think did a disservice to all of us in terms of, number one, that's not the best way to defend Dr. Carhart. And we did point out that law enforcement, where a lot of us come from, equals stop and frisk and police murder, number one. But, you know, engaging with these people does not have to involve merely screaming and shouting at them. Actually, when we got into discussion, it was quite interesting. And we learned a lot from talking to people on our own side about why it is necessary and possible to challenge people about religion, why this is fundamentally a question of the status and role of women in society, and even, you know, are the police our friends in this case? We learned at the end of the week that when patients and the doctors showed up and the antis were there, the police disappeared and let the antis do whatever the hell they wanted to do, which was roaming all over the area and trying to interfere with patients, you know, so-called counseling them. So this was, as I put it in the piece that I wrote, it was a two-sided battle, and it needs to be much more two-sided. We were very fortunate to get quite a few young women, that is, under age 35 and some under age 25, who were on the front lines of this, and one of them's here with me to talk to you.
All right, why don't we talk with her?
Okay, this is Megan.
Hi, Megan, how you doing?
To be from the Los Angeles area. Here she is.
Okay. But before we talk with Megan, let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Deborah Sweet, the National Director of World Can't Wait, and Megan, a young woman who traveled across the country to be part of the Summer of Trust and join in the struggle to defend Dr. Leroy Carhart's Germantown, Maryland abortion clinic from the anti-abortion, anti-women fascists in Operation Rescue. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, Michael.
Hi. So this was your first time out in this kind of effort, this kind of campaign. What did you think?
It was a really inspiring, event, really. I learned a lot from being there. We were able to actually fundraise to be out here through Revolution Books in Los Angeles. I'd like to make sure I get a big thank you out to everybody who helped us, because we wouldn't have been able to participate in this without them. Of course, California Now helped us significantly to get out here as well, so we'd like to thank them. But what we really realized was that this doesn't have anything to do with children or fetuses. It really is, it's about controlling a woman and taking away self-determination. We had instances where there were fathers walking down the sidewalk with their, you know, three young daughters trailing behind them, rebuking defiance. The fathers just telling their young daughters, you know, that the worst thing that they could possibly do would be to be defiant against his God. And it was very, I realized that, you know, it was much less about the fetuses and about the protection of women, which is what they like to, say, that, you know, we're trying to protect women and we're trying to protect the unborn, but really it's not. It's about condemning and shaming and guilting women for making decisions that are necessary for their own lives and their livelihood and their futures.
But did you get a chance to actually even go into the crowd and talk to some of the younger people who were on the anti-abortion side?
We did the last couple of days. We were separated most of the time that we were there. There was, you know, maybe less than a mile between us, but we had our post and then they had their post, which generally there was no more than 10 or 15 of them down there on any given day, except for the last Sunday and Monday. They had rallied quite a mass of people, and it was a lot of young people. And when you start talking to them, they start saying things to you about, you know, birth control being disgusting and that birth control is actually the cause of and promotes unplanned pregnancy and STDs and HIV, and that by sending, you know, condoms and birth control and things like that to Africa, we're actually, you know, causing death, and you know, young women are actually, you know, really considering not even using protection at all because of what they're being told. They're being told that the tiny holes in condoms, you know, don't protect them from STDs, so why use them at all?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really actually pretty scary what they're being told. And it's obvious that it doesn't have anything to do with again, protecting women or, you know, unborn, you know, so-called unborn children, these fetuses. It's really about making sure that women are doing their duty, as, you know, reproductive vessels.
Well, now tell me, look, you know, one of the things I'm thinking of as you're talking, I'm thinking, wow, this is, you know, this is very important that you're talking about this and that you went there and found this. And I'm also wondering, you know, part of the thing is that, look, these fascists more and more and these religious fundamentalists more and more of any stripe, you know, seem to be, they're gathering their forces again. They're coming out. They just had this huge rally down in Texas. There's all kinds of, you know, many of the Republican presidential candidates are setting terms that talk about, you know, that are sort of, I'm a Jesus loving whatever, you know, this is the kind of, and my Jesus is a warrior God or something, you know, and he wars against women, he wars against Arabs, he wars against whoever, you know, and it's, you know, except Americans. But the response that's because he has a red, white, and blue helmet with wings. Okay. Notice it is a he. There you go. But the thing is, here's a question for you, because the response that needs to be really mounted in this, and you can answer this and then maybe give the phone back to Deborah and we can talk with her about it too. In the remaining minutes we have, I think we have about 10 minutes, 8 minutes, something like that. You know, one of the things I'd like to ask you is we have a situation here where the attacks on abortion, both from these fascist forces, as well as, you know, more sort of genteel things in the halls of Congress, where there's been more bills passed against abortion than I think ever, you know, and it's just been this onslaught and people don't even know about it, you know, and yet there hasn't been a response that's commensurate with the level of the attack, including from a lot of young people. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you see things here and it brings out, when you have defensive clinics or you have, you know, people standing up for abortion, and it brings out a certain number of people, but there's a lot of, it's not really what needs to happen, you know, in terms of how do you, and for you, I mean, I think it's really got to be something that presses on you, or it raises, you know, you must be thinking about this a lot. How can you bring people of your generation into this as well as broader forces? What do you think? Where do we go from here?
Wow. That's a big question. I really think just getting out and talking, to people about abortion, about people being able to control their own lives, you know, what really is happening here, and explaining these things, because people are, you know, sort of brainwashed into the idea that, you know, abortion is murder, which is not true, and that, you know, the most important thing that a woman can do is bear children, which is not true. And when you tell that a woman, you know, that the most important thing she can do in the world is bear children, then you're limiting her to only that, and there's so much more importance to be done. But I think destigmatizing abortion and then talking about it on a regular basis and not being afraid of the shame and the guilt that is put upon young women who have gone through these procedures or consider going through these procedures or who even get pregnant at a young age and decide to carry through with their pregnancy. I mean, they're shamed just as much as women who decide to terminate. So, you know, really educating young people to what's actually happening. And, yeah, like you said, there's been an onslaught. I mean, 900 plus anti-choice bills have been introduced, and like you said, nobody knows about it. And that's kind of the things that we want to bring to the forefront of people's minds, is that this is a much bigger issue than once thought of. And what we are trying to do actually in Los Angeles, and when I get back, is start having community events that are for, you know, young people 21 and up, but also for people of junior high and high school age, to be able to engage in these types of conversations surrounding their, you know, their reproductive rights.
Great, Megan. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you. Now, let me speak to Deborah, and we'll wrap this up in about 5 minutes. So could I talk to Deborah again? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye now. Bye. Let's welcome once again Deborah Sweet, the National Director of the World Can't Wait organization. Hello, Deborah.
Hey.
Hey. Hi, Deborah. So same question to you. You know, the response that we get, it's good that it's that the summer of trust happened, that it's this clinic defense is ongoing, you know, is getting a life into it again. But at the same time, the response is not really as commensurate to the size of the assault against abortion. I mean, some of these antis, even while they do this fascistic assault against the clinics and the targeting of doctors, they also talk about, well, we also have our, you know, nice and easy legal angle, which seems to be gaining a lot of ground. My question is, how do we reinvigorate this kind of movement that brings people Megan's age as well as people our age back out into the streets around this really critical question? Where do we go from here?
Well, it is different levels, and the legislative thing is nothing to sneeze at, because they have gotten dozens of bills passed in state legislatures, especially since the Republican majorities came in last fall, very quickly in a coordinated effort to, you know, clinics are having to shut down because they passed these ridiculous laws regulating the size of the janitor closets and the hallways in a way that other medical offices are not regulated. There are laws being passed that women will be forced to look at an ultrasound even early in pregnancy before they can go ahead with an abortion. All of these things. I think Megan put it really well when she said that women are being shamed and made to feel guilty for making these decisions. So this is pervasive across society. It's very important that Dr. Carhart and other doctors be directly defended by people literally standing in front of their clinics with the message that people support them, that there's nothing wrong with abortion, that women have to be agents in this. That's extremely important. But, you know, we were just received an email this morning that a group called Pro-Life, and I put that in quotes, students, is going to have a chalk day on September 8th in campuses across the country. They're going to be chalking pro-life slogans on campuses. And it was actually Megan last week that pioneered the technique of, you know, not just trying to rub out these chalkings, but she and some others developed, I thought, a brilliant way of remaking the slogans, changing what was written, so that they became slogans in support of abortion and women's rights. And we're going to put out a handbook on how to do that, because the other thing that, you know, this is ridiculous. These so-called pro-life student groups are complaining that on all these liberal campuses, they can't get a hearing. The last time I was up at Columbia University, the pro-life group dwarfs the size of the pro-choice group, which is not even active right now. Now, there's a great potential for people to come out for abortion rights if the work is done at Columbia, for instance. But I can't wait for the pro-life students to come out and start chalking the sidewalks at Columbia, because now we know what to do.
Uh-huh.
We have the basis for bringing, you know, some real solid opposition out. And we've seen time after time after time when these anti-abortion groups show up on campuses with big bloody fetus posters, if even one person goes out to oppose them with a pro-choice sign, other people will come and join and say, thank you. I hate watching these people. I can't stand them, but I didn't know what to do. So there, I think our greatest fight right now is in the realm of public opinion, bringing out the people who are quietly, of course, in support of women's rights, even if, as they say, well, I wouldn't have an abortion myself, but I support your right to do that. You know what? You never know what life is going to bring you, and you absolutely have to have the ability to have things like abortion and divorce available, right?
Absolutely.
This is really how women are going to be able to function in a not enslaved kind of way, and we are very aware that through most of human history and in most of the countries of the world today, and including in very deeply profound ways in this one, women are enslaved and are not able to have the interaction in the world that we need to be truly free and self-actualizing, as they say.
And we need a whole generation that's on a mission to join with others of all ages to stand up against this and to turn the world around, because it really does not have to be this way. Deborah, thank you very much. Where can people get in touch with you or find out more information about this movement?
Well, go to summeroftrust.com. That's reporting on what's happening, what did happen at Dr. Carhart's clinic, and going forward, this is where you can find a handbook of how to respond to these people on campuses. And, you know, just one last point. It's not just that we are being forced to respond to this. This is a huge opportunity to change the world, because whatever goes forward, the oppression of women is actually one of those unresolved contradictions that can help us get to a whole new society, a revolution and a change in the way human beings interact. So we've got to act on this, and women have to be part of changing the world.
All right, Deborah Sweet, National Director of World Can't Wait. And Megan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, talk to you again soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we're going to take a quick musical break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Father Roy Bourgeois about the attempts of the Maryknoll Order to kick him out. All right, so stay tuned. We'll find out why and what's going on.
Where would that be? And it's solid as a rock. Throw me in the hell, where would that be? And it's user-friendly as a Maryknoll club. A rebel rock me.
All right, at the end of July, Father Roy Bourgeois, a Maryknoll priest, was received a letter telling him that he was going to be kicked out of the Maryknoll Order if he didn't publicly recant his state of belief that women should be allowed to be priests in the Catholic Church. And for those of you who don't know much about Roy Bourgeois, he's a Catholic priest who is known and loved throughout the world, and he's somebody who's dedicated 4 decades of his life to speaking out against, standing up against, and mobilizing others to join him in opposing the crimes of the U.S. government around the world. Now, Roy's been arrested countless times, served time in prison for his actions, and is best known as a leading voice in the fight against the School of the Americas, or as it's now known, the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Oh, a very clean name for a dirty place, all right? One of the primary training centers for dictators and torturers throughout Latin America. And Roy Bourgeois, as is standard for Roy Bourgeois, is standing up. He's a man of conscience. He's standing up and saying, to hell with that. I'm going to fight this. I cannot do what you want me to do. And he's here to talk with us about that. Roy, how are you?
Good to be with you, Michael.
Yeah, you too, man. Well, let's talk about this. How did this develop?
Well, you know, our experiences change us, as it did me. I mean, I was many years ago as a young man, you know, in the military, actually in Vietnam, I felt God was calling me to be a priest, and I answered that call into the Maryknoll Order. I was ordained a Catholic priest and went to serve the poor in Latin America. That got me very involved in the School of the Americas issue that so many people are involved in today, trying to shut down a school that causes untold suffering and death throughout Central America and Latin America. But it was in my ministry after being kicked out of Bolivia, you know, opposing, as the poor did, the dictatorship that we, the United States, was supporting there. But it was in my ministry now in the United States over the last 20 years, working on the School of the Americas issue, building up the movement with many others, that I met these devout Catholic women in the church who were saying to me, a Catholic priest, you know, for 39 years, that they were being called to be priests. And I must say, we never questioned that when we were in the seminary. And what I had to do, of course, was start thinking about what I was hearing and doing some research and reflection. And what I discovered in really looking at our church's teaching that says women cannot be ordained, what I discovered was a grave injustice against women and against God, of course, who created men and women equally, and who calls both to the priesthood. And so I started asking, you know, fellow priests, you know, I mean, who are we to reject God's call of women to the priesthood? And I began to really break my silence on this issue. As we know, silence is the voice of consent. And really, when I went public, I mean, I really poked that beehive of patriarchy. I had no idea how deep the sexism really was, you know, among my fellow priests. And, of course, coming out of the Vatican. And then I attended the ordination of a woman very active in the SOA Watch movement, who among the over 300 who went to prison for 6 months protesting the SOA, Dana Sever-Desinska, one of the many women called to be a priest in the Catholic Church. So I did attend. It was an honor to attend her ordination in Lexington, Kentucky 2 years ago. And it took this actually about less than 90 days after going to her ordination, and that I received a letter from the Vatican, very severe, harsh letter, giving me 30 days to recant my belief in public statements that support the ordination of women, or I will be excommunicated automatically. I wrote to the Vatican, giving my reasons why in conscience I could not recant, bringing up this issue of sexism that's at the root of the teaching. Never heard anything from the Vatican. And as you mentioned, just recently now, I received a letter from the Marino Superior General, my community, saying, you know, that I must recant my belief in public statements supporting the ordination of women, or I will be kicked out of the Marino community. And again, I wrote back recently, just days ago, saying, it is not possible to recant. What you're asking me to do is to lie, to say that I do not believe women can be priests. And that is not theologically sound. It can't stand up to scrutiny. And they don't want any discussion on this issue, it seems. They want two words, I recant, and this I cannot do.
We're talking with Roy Bourgeois from the Marino Order, and he's actually, for people that know of Roy, know that, you know, look, this is a brother who has stood up, and as he's been talking about, he stood in the face of oppressors and against oppression all of his life. You know, since he, you know, even he's talking about he was in Vietnam when he decided to become a priest, and from that moment on, he actually decided that he would stand with the poor and the oppressed around the world. And he's never, ever been less than a man of ultimate conscience. And I think that's incredibly important. And for the church to be doing this is really revealing in a number of ways. And Roy, you say something here. You say that basically what you told them is not just that you couldn't lie. You said, look, I believe that our church's teaching that excludes women from the priesthood defies both faith and reason and cannot stand up to scrutiny. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, again, when we were in the seminary years ago, and I've asked so many fellow priests, did we ever question the church's teaching on women or excluding women from the priesthood? And we never did. It was always the tradition. Just as growing up in, you know, in the rural South in a small town in Louisiana, you know, years ago, attending, of course, as everyone, you know, the segregated public school. We didn't question, you know, the segregation policies then. It was always the tradition. Well, in questioning the tradition in the Catholic Church that excludes women from the priesthood, that excludes women as equals in the church, what I discovered was really a grave sin, that sin of sexism. And sexism, as I said in my letter, like racism, is a sin. And no matter how hard we may try to justify discrimination against others, in this case against women, it cannot be justified. In the end, it is not the way of God, but the way of men. And what I see in my Catholic Church really is this culture of clericalism. We can't talk about this issue of sexism without addressing the issue of power. And what I've discovered, and I'm sad to say, is that a lot of my fellow priests, especially our church leaders in the Vatican, they do not want to give up their power, their privileges, their entitlements. They see women really as a threat to their power and their control. And I have no doubt, however, I'm filled with a lot of hope in my travels as I address this issue, always speaking about the School of the Americas issue and women's ordination. I mean, I see a movement, this women's ordination movement, that's unstoppable. It's like trying to stop, you know, the civil rights movement, the prohibition of slavery, or the women's suffrage movement. There were many in the Catholic Church who opposed these movements, as they are opposing the ordination of women. But I must say, my Marino community and the Catholic Church is on the wrong side of history. And I have no doubt I see this movement just growing so fast. It's just a matter of time. Women in the Catholic Church will be ordained. But we need, as in our SOA Watch movement, we need a lot more voices. We need a lot more people, you know, struggling for justice.
Now, Roy, one of the things that you're saying, I found this very interesting, because one of the things you're saying, you're talking about this, it's an issue of power, and you talk about it's it's an issue of women's oppression. And I think, you know, there's really, like you said, it's sexism, the oppression of women, but there's something here, too, that happens in this whole strain of sort of, you know, literal interpretations of the Bible, and the idea that we were just talking with Deborah Sweet about the struggle around abortion, and one of the things that a lot of these very fundamentalist Christians bring up is the whole, you know, Garden of Eden, original sin myth, and the idea that this is actually something that is a stain on women, and for that reason, women are basically relegated to a secondary position in society. Does that continue to play a role in this whole opposition to the ordination of women into the priesthood?
Oh, you bet. I mean, that sexism goes back a long time. We're talking about, you know, over 2,000 years, when from the very beginning, men started to claim, you know, this power that they, and they alone as males, knew the will of God. And in the Catholic Church, as it developed, you know, we had people like, sorry to say, you know, some of the great saints in the Church, Thomas Aquinas and Bonaventure, who put it very clearly. Males were superior. Females are inferior. Of course, they can't use that language today. And so what they try to do is be more diplomatic and try to blame Jesus for all of this sexism by saying, well, this man Jesus called only male apostles. What they don't say, though, is that Jesus called a woman, Mary Magdalene, to be the first witness to his resurrection, which is really at the core of Christianity. They don't say this, that Jesus chose a woman as the first witness to his resurrection, and really to bring the message to the male apostles, you know, about the good news of the resurrection. Where were the men? They were hiding behind closed doors. They were frightened. They were afraid. But this they leave out. And women, as I look back on church history, women have been sidelined, left out, as the Vatican today is trying to do with women, trying to say, women simply cannot be ordained because Jesus did not call them. This is not accurate. This is, I would say, is just theological. It's unsound. It cannot stand up to scrutiny. But what I find, too, Michael, is that they, the church leaders, don't want to even discuss this issue because they know it's so hard to get in a debate with or any kind of a discussion with the church leaders because I think they're so insecure, they don't even want to ask that answer, the basic question that women are asking, and I'm asking them, you know, who are you as men to reject God's call of women? Who are we as men to say that our call from God is authentic, but yours as women is not? What we have here, again, is not the way of God, but the way of men. And let's call it by its right name. It's called sexism.
Well, let me remind listeners that we're talking with Father Roy Bourgeois, and he's a member of the Marinal Order. He's a priest, and he has been threatened with expulsion from the Marinal Order for advocating or for refusing to recant his advocacy of women being allowed to be priests in the Catholic Church. Now, Roy, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, I remember the Marinal, and it's true. It's, you know, I'm sitting here thinking all the way back. You know, it was like there was always a separation. You know, I was an altar boy, right? And mm-hmm. and you know, there was a separation there, very, very sharp separation. Girls were not allowed to be anywhere near the altar. You know, and they weren't allowed to cross. I think they would be executed if they fell over the rail during receiving communion or something. Right? It was really very bad. But at the same time, I also remember getting the Mary Knoll magazine and all this, where I learned some stuff about the world through some of that. But in particular, you chose that order, and you chose it based on, I guess, a belief that this stood apart in terms of its mission to serve, you know, humanity, to serve the poor and the oppressed. What's going on here? There seems to be a sudden, you know, like it's like one of those things where you step on the brakes, you're going 90 miles an hour, and your car does a 180-degree turn. It's sort of, what is going on? What is going on here? Did this surprise you that the Mary Knoll order would stand up and say, look, Roy, you're out if you don't recant this? Because this is a little bit like Galileo, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, it was a surprise, also a disappointment in my, actually, it's not my, I'm getting so much support from many of my fellow priests in Mary Knoll. You know, we've been struggling. I've been in the community now for 44 years, ordained from 39, and so many of them will write and call and say, Roy, we're with you, brother. Like you, I support the ordination of women, but very afraid of going public. There's so much fear in the church today. It reminds me when I was living in Bolivia under the dictatorship of General Banza, when the men with the guns ran the country, and we had to meet underground, you know. And today, so many priests are simply afraid to go public because of the consequences. They're afraid they're going to lose their pension, they're going to get fired. And I just simply cannot be silent. There's this issue of conscience involved, of course. But I came into Mary Knoll because of its well-known work for the oppressed, for issues of justice. They worked with the poorest of the poor around the world, and they were on the side of justice. And that's what attracted me to them. And many, many are writing to Mary Knoll, saying just that we have been supporting your organization, your work, because of your work for justice. And this is a justice issue. And if they are going to follow through with this, it saddens me to know that my community, Mary Knoll, will take a lot of hits. People do not want to, support financially and otherwise in any organization that would discriminate against others. And they're going to direct their support, their funds to others, groups that will not, discriminate. And so at the core of this issue, with a number of Mary Knolls are bringing up, actually over 200 priests today are going public with an open, there's an open letter that has been sent to the Superior of Mary Knoll addressing the issue of conscience. As Catholics, as people of faith, we believe in the primacy of conscience. It's something very sacred. It really tells us, to choose right from wrong, what is just. And what they are asking me to do really is to betray my conscience and to say something that in conscience I cannot say or do. And so a lot of priests are actually, the names of these priests, they're going public. Their names and more information on this issue can be found on the website Call to Action, a very good group, CTA, that's CTA-USA.org. That's the Call to Action website. You're getting a lot more information. My letter in full that I received from Mary Knoll talking about the grave scandal that I have caused in the church by supporting the ordination of women, and also my response. About the grave scandal, I joined the many who are really, really upset by the use of those words in reference to women being ordained. Those words should be used, by our bishops when it came to the sexual abuse scandal of thousands of children in the church. So many people are bringing that up when they start talking about a scandal. But again, a lot of good, I believe, Micah, will come from this, I mean, this movement, this is bringing more people into the movement. We have poked the beehive here, and I encourage more people to come on board, to look at this issue and perhaps use their voices, their energy, along with the CTA-USA.org website. Listeners can also go to womensordination.org and also to NCR, National Catholic Report, ncronline.org for all kinds of good information on this.
All right, Roy. And one real quick question, if you can answer this in 35 seconds or less.
Yeah.
Do you think this has any connection to the stands you've taken, the stands of conscience you've taken all of your time, all of your life in the Maryknoll Order, the stands you've taken on the side of the oppressed and being very, you know, look, forthright and out there, bold, arrested many times, jail time, in support of the oppressed and also standing against the what the U.S. does to people around the world, particularly with the School of Americas. You know, it's interesting. Do you think there's any tie-in between the assault on you now and what you've done in the past?
Nothing would surprise me. The power of the Pentagon. I was speaking out against militarism. Our movement has grown, you know, in such large numbers. And, of course, our website for the SOAW.org. We're preparing for our big November vigil. But I think what's going on is the Vatican is really putting pressure on my Maryknoll superior to intervene and to kick me out. And
people have to stand with you. People have to stand with you. We're running out of time at the moment, but people have to stand with you. And so I really...
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, silence is the voice of complicity. I just ask people to weigh in and to express, you know, go to these websites. There are lots of addresses that you can write and let your voice email. Let your voices be heard.
All right, Roy, thank you very much. And we'll talk
to you
again soon. Bye now.
Bye.
That brings us to the end of another show. But before we go, given that we have spent the hour talking about the oppression of women, and many of us are searching for a way to end that, I want to read a quote from Bob Avakian on the subject. And this is taken from his new book, Basics. In many ways, and particularly for men, the woman question and whether you seek to completely abolish or to preserve the existing property and social relations and corresponding ideology that enslave women, or maybe just a little bit of them, is a touchstone question among the oppressed themselves. It's a dividing line between wanting in and really wanting out, between fighting to end all oppression and exploitation and the very division of society into classes and seeking in the final analysis to get your part in this. That was from Bob Avakian's new book, Basics. You can't change the world if you don't know the basics. If you want to write to me, you can at michaelslate@redfuture.com. Again, that's michaelslate@redfuture.com. You've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. I want to thank my engineer today, Tamika, my production assistant, Henry Carson, all of you for tuning in. We're going out now with Rise Against and Architects. You got to be the architects of the future you must create, so check it out.